Okay, let's dive in. Picture this. You're there with your instrument, maybe guitar, piano, whatever.
Yeah.
You found that perfect YouTube video.
Right. Could be a lesson, could be just someone playing a song you want to learn.
Exactly. And it's great until you hit that one tricky bit, that solo, that chord change.
The part you need to hear again and again, maybe be slower.
And you're trying to use the standard YouTube player. Pause. Drag the slider. Oops, too far. Drag it back.
It's fiddly, right? Takes you completely out of the flow of actually playing.
Totally. And you just think, man, there has to be a better way to use YouTube for actually learning music.
Well, that feeling, that frustration, it's super common for musicians. The standard player just isn't built for, focused
It's
practice.
built for watching cat videos, mostly.
Pretty much. For music, you need like precision control. You need loops, ways to slow things down properly, maybe even take notes right there.
And that's exactly what we're digging into today. We found this tool, or rather, information about this tool, called YouTube for Musicians from musiclessons.com.
Right. Our source material here is basically the website content from musiclessons.com describing this tool.
Which is interesting in itself because we get to see how they pitched it, what problems they said it solves, what features they highlighted.
And crucially, what they said about its current status, any updates or issues.
So that's our mission. Unpack everything the source material tells us about this YouTube for Musicians. What was it supposed to do? How did it claim to help? And what's the story based only on what they wrote on their site? Let's get into it.
Okay, so starting point, the core idea. What was YouTube for Musicians all about, according to them?
The pitch seems simple enough. Take the normal YouTube experience, but make it better specifically for musicians learning or playing along.
They saw YouTube as this massive resource, but with the wrong controls for practice.
Exactly. Their stated goal, right from the source, was making learning and playing along with YouTube videos easier and more fun.
That phrase, easier and more fun, really flags that they understood the musician's pain point, that friction of rewinding manually.
So how did they plan to deliver on that? What was the actual mechanism?
Well, the source says they did it by adding musician-friendly video controls.
Not just play pause then. Specialized stuff.
Right. Things musicians actually need. And it sounds like this might have worked in a couple of ways, maybe as like a browser extension that added controls right onto youtube.com.
Oh, okay. Like overlaying new buttons.
Potentially,
Yeah.
or maybe through a dedicated player on the musiclessons.com site itself where you'd paste a YouTube link. The key thing was layering these practice tools onto the YouTube video.
So they weren't trying to host the videos themselves, just build a better dashboard for the existing YouTube content.
Precisely. Leverage YouTube's library, but make it usable for practice. And the source makes a point of saying this was powered by musiclessons.com.
And that musiclessons.com is, or was, a musician-founded company.
Which gives it a bit of context, right? Suggests it wasn't just some random tech company, but maybe people who'd actually faced these practice problems themselves. Built by musicians, for musicians.
That's the vibe they seem to be putting out, credibility.
Definitely. And interestingly, even in this initial pitch, they drop a technical detail that becomes, well, pretty important later.
Oh, yeah. What's that?
They mention that accessing the YouTube API service is required for the tool to work correctly.
Ah, the API, the application programming interface, the way different software systems talk to each other.
Exactly. So they're saying right up front, look, for this thing to do its job properly, we need this connection to YouTube's backend.
That's foreshadowing, maybe, setting the stage for something.
It seems that way in hindsight. Reading the whole source, it highlights this dependency on YouTube's tech and rules right from the get-go.
Okay, core concept clear. Enhance YouTube, make practice easier, powered by musicians, needs the YouTube API. Let's get into the juicy stuff, the actual features. What musician-friendly controls did they build?
This is where it gets really interesting based on their description. They seem to have targeted those common frustrations head on, top of the list, looping.
Ah, looping. Yes, absolutely essential. Trying to nail a riff, a lick, a chord change. You got to hear it over and over.
Right, and the source describes their looping feature not just as a single bookmark, but as a bookmark to a section of a video played over and over, a defined segment.
So you set a start point and an end point.
Exactly. They specify the format, HMM.SSHNM.SS, hour, minute, second start, hyphen, hour, minute, second end. They even say the hour part is optional for shorter videos.
That precision is key. You can grab just those crucial few seconds.
And the idea is you set those time codes and the tool handles the repetition automatically.
So no more manual rewinding, you just focus on playing.
That's the promise. The Source really emphasizes the utility for practice, focusing intensely on difficult bits without breaking your flow. The tool does the repetitive work.
That alone sounds like a game changer for video-based learning. Did they offer any tweaks to the loops, like options?
Yeah, they mentioned one interesting customization. Loops can be played with an optional delay at the end.
Well, that's thoughtful. Why would you want a delay?
Well, imagine you're practicing something fast. A little pause after each repetition could give you a moment to reset your fingers, catch your breath, think about the next go. It's practical.
Yeah, I can see that. So it's not just mindless repetition, but structured repetition.
Yeah.
And could you save these loops you created?
Absolutely. The Source says loops could be saved with a title and description.
So you could label it like Stairway Solo Fast Bit and maybe add a note like focus on timing.
Exactly that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Makes it easy to find and remember later. And they mentioned these saved loops could be quickly found in your My Stuff section below the search box. So a dedicated spot to manage your practice loops.
Okay, looping sounds really well thought out. What about other learning aids? Like taking notes. You often want to jot down chords or ideas while watching.
They had that covered too with a feature called Personal Notes. The Source describes it as allowing you to add notes directly to videos.
Like digital sticky notes in the video timeline.
Sort of, yeah. The Source gives examples of what you might note down. Chord progressions, key signatures, lyrics, or any other information you want to save for a video. Pretty flexible.
And did these notes just sit there, or was there more to it?
This is the really clever part, according to the Source. The notes were auto-linked to bookmarks and loops.
Auto-linked?
Using the same time code formats. A single HHM.SS links a note to one point in time. The hyphenated HHMSHHMRMOS links a note to an entire loop segment.
Whoa. Okay, hang on. So if I'm learning a song and there's a tricky chord at, say, 1 minute 15 seconds.
You could add a note at 0.1.15 saying C-sharp diminished seventh here.
And when the video gets to 1.110, that note pops up.
That's the implication. Or for a loop covering, say 0.2.3 to 0.2.40, you could link a note saying, watch the left-hand fingering carefully in this section. When that loop plays, the note is contextually relevant.
That integrates your own analysis right into the playback. That's really powerful.
It aims to turn passive watching into active, annotated learning. And importantly, the Source stresses these notes are private and can only be seen by you.
Good. So it's your personal digital practice journal tied directly to the video content.
Exactly. The combination of that precise looping and the time-linked private notes seems like the core of the enhanced practice experience they were offering.
Beyond those two big ones, looping and notes, did they mention any other player enhancements?
Yes, a couple of other things are listed under other control enhancements. They mention the ability to slow it down.
Standard, but essential for learning tricky parts.
Absolutely. They also reiterate the ability to add delays, which we mentioned for loops, but maybe it applied more generally to the Source isn't super specific there.
Okay.
And there was a recommend this video feature. Sounds like users could suggest videos for a video of the day page on the site, some kind of community curation element.
Gotcha. So a suite of tools, looping, notes, slowdown, delays, and a bit of community suggestion covers the interaction with a video. But what about managing lots of videos? Did it help with organization?
Yes, that was definitely part of the picture. Keeping track of useful videos is a huge challenge for online learners.
Tell me about it. My YouTube watch later list is a disaster zone.
Right. So this tool offered several places to save videos, according to the Source. They list favorites, playlists, loops, which we know could be saved, recent history, and a general bucket called My Saved Videos.
Okay, some standard sounding names there. How did playlists work in their system? Similar to YouTube's own.
The description sounds familiar, yeah. Playlists let you save, share, and organize your favorite YouTube videos. When adding a video, you could add to existing videos in a playlist or empty the collection first to start fresh.
So you could build up collections, like here are all the videos on blue scales I found useful, or here's my practice routine playlist for the week.
Exactly that. Structuring your learning, curating resources for specific goals, it moves beyond just bookmarking individual videos.
Makes sense. Now, you mentioned saving. Did the Source say anything about where this stuff was saved, like on your computer versus online?
Yes, they made a specific distinction, local versus account saving.
Okay, what's the difference there?
A local folder, as they describe it, saved videos that existed only on this computer. Quick and easy, maybe, but tied to one machine.
So if I save something on my desktop, I wouldn't see it on my laptop.
Right. But they also mention you could create as many folders as you want by logging into your account.
Ah, so the account unlocks more.
That's the idea. Creating a free account with musiclessons.com allowed you to save multiple folders that can be accessed from any computer.
That's a big deal. Practice anywhere, access your saved stuff.
Huge convenience factor.
Right.
And the account also enables sharing. The source says account folders let you share them with your friends.
So local is simple but isolated. Account is cross-device and shareable. A clear trade-off.
Yep. The account seemed key to the more advanced organization and community features. And they highlighted sharing in a few places.
Like with loops.
Yeah, loops could be shared with the community, assuming you didn't mark them private, and also shared with your friends. They did add a note that shared loops needed a good, clear name and description. Makes sense if others are going to use them.
Suggests a bit of a user-to-user help ecosystem, maybe. Sharing those tricky bits you figured out.
It points in that direction. Playlists, too, were described as something you could save, share, and organize. Sharing was baked into the playlist concept.
And the account folders, as you said, could be shared with friends.
Right. So whether it's a specific loop, a curated playlist, or a whole folder of saved videos, sharing seemed to be a core capability unlocked by having an account.
It really paints a picture of a system designed not just for watching one video, but for building, managing, and even sharing a whole personalized library of YouTube-based learning materials.
It definitely aimed to be more than just a fancy player. It was positioned as a learning management tool built around YouTube content.
Now, this YouTube for Musicians tool wasn't just floating in cyberspace, right? It was part of musiclessons.com. How did the source material present its relationship to the rest of the site?
It was clearly integrated. The source mentions site navigation links like find teachers, courses, and articles alongside the YouTube tool.
So it was one piece of a larger puzzle.
Exactly. It seems like it was designed to work with their other offerings. That account system we talked about for saving YouTube stuff, probably the same account you'd use for their courses or connecting with teachers.
Makes sense. The free YouTube tool could draw people in, and then they might explore the paid courses or teacher finder.
That's a common model. The tool itself provides value, and it also acts as an entry point to their wider ecosystem. They also mentioned an online teaching studio.
What was that?
The source describes it briefly as a feature for teachers, created and managed by musicians who want to connect with students online. So the platform seemed to cater to both learners and teachers.
Ah, so they were trying to build a whole marketplace or environment for online music lessons.
It looks that way. Serving both sides. You could imagine a teacher maybe even using the YouTube for Musicians tool with their students within this online studio, though the source doesn't explicitly say that, but it fits the picture.
So a comprehensive platform vision with the YouTube tool as a key, potentially free component.
Presented as a core utility, adding unique value to a resource everyone already uses.
Okay, so concept, features, organization, integration, sounds pretty impressive. A really useful tool for musicians. But
there's a but, isn't there?
The source material included a pretty major update.
Yes. This is where the story, as presented in the source, takes a significant turn. There's a critical status update included.
What happened and when?
The source is very specific. It says, on July 15th, 2020, YouTube suspended our access to YouTube API service.
July 15th, 2020.
Okay.
And they gave a reason.
The reason stated in the source is changes in YouTube's licensing policy. They directly blame YouTube policy changes for the API access being suspended.
They don't say what policy changes, just that changes happen.
Correct. Just that YouTube changed its rules, and the consequence was musiclessons.com losing API access.
And what was the impact of losing that access? You mentioned earlier they said the API was required.
Exactly. They state very clearly that API access is required for YouTube for musicians to work correctly.
So, if it's required, and they lost access. What's the tool's current status according to the source?
The direct result they state is that the tool is currently working with limited functionality, and they use all caps for limited functionality.
Yeah, that sounds not good, especially after hearing about all those integrated features. What did the company say they were doing about it?
Their statement says they are exploring workarounds and will release updates as we make changes to restore the core functionality.
So trying to find ways around the API limitation. Trying to rebuild or patch things up.
That's the stated intention, trying to bring back the key features that were lost or broken by the API suspension.
And there was also that note in the legacy support section. What did that add?
Right. That message reinforces the issue. It says, features in this area are no longer supported due to changes in YouTube's licensing policy. Same reason given.
So older features explicitly unsupported now.
Yes. And that message gives a specific instruction. It is recommended that you add your saved videos to your song library.
Move your saved videos from the legacy area to a song library. What does that suggest?
It strongly suggests that the way videos were saved or managed in that legacy part of the system is now broken or unreliable because it depended on that lost API access. They're telling users, get your stuff out of there and put it somewhere else, presumably a newer part of their system that doesn't rely on that specific API connection. It's a sign of significant disruption.
Okay, let's try and piece this together, based only on what they've said. What does limited functionality likely mean for those cool features like looping and notes? Which parts would break without the API?
Well, if the API is needed to work correctly, anything that requires tight integration or control over the YouTube player itself seems vulnerable.
Like that browser extension idea, putting controls right on YouTube.com.
Almost certainly. That kind of overlay or modification would heavily depend on APIs. Without access, it's hard to see how that could function as originally designed.
And the core stuff.
Yeah.
The automatic looping. The notes popping up at the right time.
That's the heart of the limited functionality question. If the API suspension stops the tool from programmatically telling the embedded YouTube player, jump back to 0.1.30 now, or display note, #5 now, because we hit 0.2.1.
Then the automatic part breaks down.
Exactly. You might still see your saved loop points. That data could be stored on their servers, but the player might not actually perform the loop automatically. The seamless repetition is gone.
And the notes.
Same issue. The note text might still be saved in your account, but if the tool can automatically link its display to the video's current timestamp via the API, then the auto-linked magic is lost. They become static notes, not dynamic annotations tied to playback.
So you might still have the data, the loop times, the note text, but the enhanced playback behavior that made the tool special is likely what's limited or broken.
That seems the most logical interpretation based only on their statements that the API is required and the result is limited functionality. The core musician-specific enhancements are probably hit hardest. Maybe basic embedding of a video still works, but the unique value proposition is compromised.
Wow. It really highlights how building on someone else's platform, relying on their API, makes you vulnerable to their policy decisions.
It's a classic risk for tools built in an ecosystem like this. One change by the platform owner, and your functionality can be significantly impacted, just as the source material describes happened here in July 2020.
Okay, almost done. Just quickly, what did the source say about the company itself, MusicLessons.com, and how people could contact them?
They reiterate their identity. A musician-founded company committed to building high-quality educational experiences for students and teachers.
And contact methods. If someone needed help or had feedback.
Standard stuff listed. Send us an email at support@musiclessons.com or visit our contact page. They also explicitly asked for feedback. Send us your feedback.
And they had specific help for login issues.
Yeah, links or instructions for reset your password, resend activation email, and a general visit our support page. Basic account support functions.
So they present themselves as accessible, musician-focused, and providing standard support channels, even while dealing with this major API issue.
That's the picture painted by the source material.
Right. So let's wrap up this deep dive into YouTube for Musicians from the MusicLessons.com source.
We started with the core idea, enhancing YouTube for music practice, born from musician frustrations.
We detailed those key features they described, the precise timecode looping with optional delays, the integrated, private, auto-linked personal notes. Really innovative stuff.
We looked at organizations saving to favorites, playlists, managing locally versus via an account for cross-device access and sharing loops, lists, and folders.
We saw how it fit into the larger MusicLessons.com platform alongside teacher finding, courses, and their online teaching studio.
And then the crucial update. The YouTube API access suspension on July 15th, 2020, due to YouTube policy changes, resulting in the current state of limited functionality, with the company exploring workarounds and legacy features being unsupported.
Our mission was to unpack what the tool offered, its goals, and its status, using only the information they provided. I think by dissecting that source material, we've done that.
Definitely. The source reveals a really promising concept, a tool that clearly understood musician needs. But the story embedded in that source also contains a really important lesson about dependencies.
Which brings us to our final provocative thought for you, the listener, arising directly from the source material. Consider the story of YouTube for Musicians. What does its experience as a specialized tool significantly impacted by policy changes on the platform it relied upon tell us about the inherent stability, or maybe instability, of educational tools built on top of other companies' APIs and ecosystems?
Yeah, think about it. If you build your practice routine, your curated library, your detailed notes around such a tool, what does it mean for you when its core functionality can be altered or removed because of decisions made by a completely separate entity like YouTube? How dependable are these kinds of dependent tools in the long term, and how should we, as learners, factor that potential fragility into how we use them?
It's a really interesting question about building on shifting digital ground, something to think about.